You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of the Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play the Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper? A woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver. I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 57 of Take a Bow podcast. I'm your host, Eli Tokash, and today we have one of the most legendary guests. The stories that he tells, the people that he knows, the shows that he's been in, like, you name it, this guy's done it. We have Christopher Zebra on the podcast today, and it may be one of the best interviews that we've had on this show. I mean, he tells stories about Stephen Sondheim. He tells story about making the role of Lord Farquaad in Shrek, all his time in the prom. It's just such a great interview. So many great stories were told, and he was just rambling one after another, and I was literally in awe the entire time. So, very exciting interview and a very exciting show coming out to you all today. But before we get to that, let's turn it over to the Broadway news, shall we? As we inch closer to Broadway's return, we are beginning to see more protocols released, and it's amazing. And interestingly enough, what I had mentioned that I had heard many, many episodes ago from the grapevine, you know, it's actually coming out that it's true. I mean, sometimes when people say things, it's like still in the early stages, so it could change and everything like that. But it has come out that it's actually going to be true. And that's that the majority of the shows are going to be limiting the number of shows in a week. So as you know, all Broadway shows do 8 shows a week. And that's usually typical for the Broadway shows. Sometimes it'll change and fluctuate as far as holidays or Tony Awards and all of those things. But usually we can depend on it being 8 shows a week. Now, with the whole COVID protocols and everything like that, the majority of the shows are actually not going to be doing 8 shows a week. Some shows are going to be doing 8 shows a week, and that's fantastic, but others are going to be ranging from anywhere to 5 to 8 shows a week. So it's very interesting. So some shows are actually only open to fully vaccinated audience members. So make sure before you purchase a ticket that you meet their requirements. And for those of you who have already bought a ticket, thankfully their refund policies is very gracious, at least until January of next year. And then things, you know, depending on where we are in the state of our country, they may tighten up once again and be its original guidelines with all of those protocols in place. But yes, each show has, of course, their own protocols. Some require vaccines, some do not. They require at least a COVID test, something in CDC guidelines, something that follows the CDC guidelines that will prove that you're not positive for COVID, because they don't want that entering the theater. So just keep an eye out. If you're going to a show, just make sure that you review their policies. I'm not going to list every one, otherwise we'll be here for hours, and we already will be, because I like to talk and we have a long episode. So I won't bore you with that. But yes, 5 to 8 shows a week. Most shows are going to be doing less than 8, but some are doing 8. So just keep your eyes peeled. I'm sure while you were buying tickets or something, you may have caught on to that. I will keep you updated if anything changes. You know, some people, they did announce that, like, oh, through previews, maybe, like, we'll limit our shows, and maybe once we open, we'll do 8 shows a week, because we have a lot of new shows opening up. So it's all just going to vary. Still, stuff is up in the air, but at least to start out, most shows are doing 5 to 8 shows a week. There was actually only one show that's doing 5, and usually it's actually 6 to 8. So yeah, just keep your eyes peeled on that, and I'll keep you all updated if anything changes. This past weekend, Broadway celebrated Juneteenth. The Broadway League hosted a free outdoor event that was a 90-minute concert in Times Square, and it surrounded Black joy and unity on this historic day of June 19th. The event was hosted by Lilias White and Ben Vereen, two legendary Broadway performers, and they had all kinds of performances and special guest appearances from all of your favorite Broadway stars who have really led the way for BIPOC people in our industry. So it was wonderful to see this. All of these videos, you can still, if you didn't see it, if you're not in New York or whatever, you can go watch videos on YouTube. You could do Broadway World. That's where I get most of my information. All kinds of sources. If you just want to check it out, it's amazing. It's uber powerful. So go check it out if you haven't, and it's definitely worth the watch. Last Sunday was the annual Broadway Bears, Broadway Bears, I guess, event. And this year was Twerk From Home, which is kind of a really funny name. And it raised $350,000. And that's only so far. And I say so far because the stream is still available to watch that event. And in that stream, you can find the link to donate. And that is also still up. So please consider supporting Broadway Cares Equity Fights A's and enjoy the Broadway Bears Twerk From Home. If you guys are Broadway Bears fans, you all should know what Broadway Bears is. For those of you who don't, it's usually your favorite Broadway stars who don't have as much clothes on as they usually would. So yeah, and they give you a little show. And that raised a ton of money. It's one of the biggest events for Broadway Cares Equity Fights AIDS. It's one of the biggest events that people support that wonderful cause and charity. So go check it out. It's amazing. It's hilarious. And it's very entertaining. And yeah, you'll see all of your favorite Broadway stars. So Freestyle Love Supreme, American Utopia, and the Broadway Advocacy Coalition will receive special Tony Awards when the Tonys air on September 26th. It was also announced this week, Rachel Zegler is set to become the next Disney princess. We have to look out for this girl, okay? Rachel Zegler, we have to remember this name because she's not going anywhere. She is the girl who's going to be Maria in West Side Story, and now she's going to be Snow White in the live-action movie, like musical, with music from Pazic and Paul. So yes, they're taking Snow White's music and all of that from the original movie, but also they're going to have some more music, and that's going to be written from Pazic and Paul, who wrote Dear Evan Hansen and Dogfight and The Greatest Showman and all of these incredible shows. And so this is going to be so entertaining. It's Rachel Zegler, who we're all going to be like awestruck by after we see West Side Story, and she's killing it. So don't be surprised if you start seeing this name everywhere or on a Broadway stage. So yeah, and some more and more of this personal kind of celebration in news. It was announced that Kyle Dean Massey himself announced that he will not be returning to the cast of Company. And I talked to Christopher Sieber a little bit about this, but offline and not on the podcast. And there were a few reasons for this, and that's because he started a business and it's booming. Okay, but also because he and his husband are adopting a child. So he wants to be home and he wants to take care of that. And he unfortunately will not be returning to this wonderful, wonderful cast of Company on Broadway and this historic revival. However, he was already in Company before. He was in the original cast. So he's like, oh, I've done this show before and I want to be present for, because they're adopting the kid when literally it's born, basically. And he wants to be able to be there for him and watch his kid grow up and be the father and help out. And he's got a lot of exciting things going on in his life, and he just wants to be present and be able to fully enjoy those things. He wrote a beautiful message on Instagram. You can see it on Instagram. You can see it on Broadway World. You can see it on all those things. Go check that out. Kyle D. Massey is a dear, dear friend of mine who I did Pippin with. He was my Pippin. I can't say anything other than nice things about Kyle Dean Massey. So I was really excited to see him up on a stage again, but I'm so, so excited and know that this is what he was supposed to be doing at this moment in time. And that about wraps it up for this week's Broadway news. So let's turn it over to the Drama Dictionary before we turn it over to the episode. We've got lots of stuff to talk about today. And in the episode, Christopher Sieber mentioned something called a rake. And I was like, for a second, I was like, wait, what are you talking about? A rake? Like, you know, like you rake leaves? Or, and then I was like, oh my God, I remember what this means. And I was like, you know what? I don't know if a lot of people know this. And so I'm going to bring it all to you today. And that's going to be this week's Drama Dictionary. So when we talk about it in the podcast, you will understand what it means because he tries to show you visually. But unfortunately, you can't really see this visually unless you're part of our Patreon or a patron of the podcast. So I'm going to describe it really quickly so you all understand what's happening. A rake or a raked stage is a theater stage that slopes upward away from the audience. So I've talked a little bit before about like downstage is towards the audience and upstage is towards the wall, you know, like of the theater. And so basically the stage slopes higher and higher as it goes upstage. That's to improve the audience's point of view so that everybody in the audience can see it. And it also improves sound, and the sound quality is better, and especially for, you know, low-budget theaters who can't afford mics and everything, that helps the sound bounce off the walls, and it helps the acoustics and everything so that the audience members can hear it. This raked stage, or a rake in the stage, is very popular in theaters with one level. So it's actually not as popular in theaters like the Schubert Theater, which is where we talk about the raked stage in, because it has it not only has a mezzanine, but it also has a balcony. So it's got three levels for people to see, yet it's still raked. So it's very interesting, but I guess since the majority of the seats, and it's a very old theater, so that also helps. But since the majority of the seats are in the orchestra, they want to make sure that everybody in the orchestra can see even all the way from upstage. So yes, what I'm saying is the Matilda stage was raised and all different parts of the stage so that the audience members can see it better. And that's what a rake in the stage is. So when we're talking about rake, we are not talking about raking leaves because we are musical theater actors. And although that's how we paid for college, we were not talking about that at that certain time. So stay tuned because I'm referencing way too much from this interview because I enjoyed it so much and I hope you do too. So let's turn it over to Christopher Sieber. Christopher Sieber, curtain up. Okay, so today we have a two-time Tony-nominated actor, as he should, because he has played the most difficult roles on Broadway, and he can be seen in the upcoming Broadway revival of Company as Harry. So everyone, welcome to Take a Bow, Christopher Sieber.
Hi!
Oh hey. My goodness. Oh my
Hello.
God.
Hello,
I am
Eli.
So excited to be doing this with you. Hello. It's so good
to see
you.
Yeah, the funny thing is you just contacted me, what was it, yesterday?
Literally yesterday.
And you said, hey, you want to be on my podcast? I said, yes, I've got nothing to do. You want to do it tomorrow, today? Whenever,
yes.
Whenever. I'm free. I'm, you know, we're coming out of COVID.
Right.
I still have nothing to do. So
I'm just dying to talk to new people, you know?
Yeah, and who doesn't like talking about themselves? I mean, when it
right. comes down. That's what us actors, we do best, you know?
We love that.
So what I like to start out asking people who come on the show is kind of like how you got into theater, what kind of inspired you to do it, but also like what was that realization moment when you were like, oh, I could make a career out of this?
Well, it started when I was a kid, of course, like most of us. It started off as just being a class clown, I guess. And it just kind of spurred into a career.
But, I love that.
More importantly, it was about my teachers, actually. I had teachers in, I grew up in a very small town called Wyoming, Minnesota, and it was 642 people.
Oh, my God.
I mean, literally a very small town.
Yes.
And I had some teachers that noticed that, like in third grade, that I was gifted, and I'm using quotation marks now, but gifted. And they shipped me off to Minneapolis twice a week on a bus, and I would go and do the Minnesota Children's Theater there in Minneapolis. And then, yeah. And I didn't know what I was doing, but I knew I was having fun because we do, like, you know, theater games and theater exercises, but I still didn't know what theater was. I still didn't know what it was. And then the first production I think I did there was The Cookie Jar, where I played a cookie.
Oh,
in third grade. And okay. I remember hearing, I wasn't a lead by any means, you know, right. I wasn't the star cookie, but, I was in the show, but then I heard the applause.
Mm-hmm.
I heard the reactions from people, even, you know, I didn't really have much to do. I was just a cookie, you know, big chocolate chip, but, I heard the applause. I heard the applause. And I was like, that's like a drug, to hear that. And then I was in A Little Match Girl, the same thing, like the same season, I believe. And I remember just being fun, it's just dressing up in costumes. And moving on, it turned into interpretation of speech and drama and speech competitions and stuff. And that kind of strengthened. My teachers saw something in me that I didn't.
Wow.
And then... it was funny because community theater in Minnesota and the high school musicals and plays in high school. But I had, again, teachers that said, actually it was my junior year in high school. They took me into their office. There's Jane Gillis, Deb Bendix, and Henry Hebert. And they were kind of like the art, the theater teachers and the speech teachers and the theater teachers. And they brought me into their office and they sat me down and said, you need to get out of here.
Oh, and what grade was this?
I was in 11th grade, so I had one more year of you need to get out of here. There's nothing here for you. You need to go to New York. You need to go to Los Angeles, and you have something. You got to go get it. And so they helped me. And I, you know, again, I knew I was doing something, but, you know, looking back, I was an arrogant little turd. But the gift that they gave me that they saw something in me that I didn't, I just knew I just liked to make people laugh and I love the applause. And then I went to school. I went to school in New York, and right out of school, I started working, and I've been going since. I've been going, this is like 34 years.
Right. What was that like? Was it like kind of like a culture shock moving from this small town in Wyoming to moving to New York? Yeah.
642 people,
right?
And going and getting on a plane by myself, by the way. My parents wouldn't pay for the school if I left the state. So I said, okay, no problem. So what I did is I worked my butt off for a year and a half. I was assistant manager at a car wash.
No kidding.
I did yard work. I did everything I could for about a year and a half nonstop. And I saved all my money. I bought my own airline ticket. I put myself through school.
Wow.
And then my parents didn't want me to go because they thought, you know, of course, it's not a safe choice to some people to be an actor in New York and just like leave a small town and go to New York and, you know, follow your dreams. You know, no one does that in Minnesota, especially.
Yes.
So, but then, you know, they didn't want me to go, and I went, and I think I've thrived.
So I think it's safe to say that it worked out.
I think it worked out that fine. But, you know, you've been in the business long enough too that, you know, it's, you know, you never stop.
No, And actually, we also have a very similar story. Like, same, I grew up in a very small town, a little more than 642 people. But I would take a bus, or my parents would try to drive me all the way to Pittsburgh to do my local theater, because that was the closest thing. West Virginia frowned upon it. If you weren't a lawyer, if you're not a doctor, you're not going to be successful. You know, like that small town mentality. And then one day, one of my teachers were like, you need to go to New York. And I booked my first audition. And here we are 7 years later, and I haven't left.
What was it? What was it, Pippin?
My first audition was Mary Poppins.
Mary Poppins?
So, yes.
And you got it?
Yeah, and I got it. I got the tour.
That's
and fine. Yeah. Yeah, it was amazing. And it was literally, like you said, I hear the applause and it's like, oh my God, what can I do next? Like, right. and then, you know, doing it 8 shows a week, you're like, oh, what can I try tonight to get another applause? You know?
Yeah.
So it's riveting, really. So let's start out in talking about Matilda, since we've kind of mentioned it. you played Miss Trunchbull for upwards of 2 years. I mean,
yeah, a little over 2 years. Yeah.
How fun was it just to be a monster to children for 8 shows a week?
Well, you know, it was, first of all, it's quite possibly one of the most demanding roles for any actor ever.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's not vocally, your voice will be hamburger for about the first eight weeks, maybe. Your body will be so sore most of the time.
God.
Because it's so acrobatic.
Right. Also, the costume.
The costume is not bad. It's just like you're wearing a sofa. So it's
really,
it really is. It's so hot. I had an ice vest underneath that because you could sweat your pants off.
Oh my God.
And it's also the loneliest show, because when you play the evil person in a show, you're usually alone because all the good people are on stage and then you have to come on and play the evil stuff. So it's very lonely, right. You know. I mean, I had, of course, the cast there, but during the show itself, it's like you're just there with my dresser, Jessica.
Right.
But that was it. But it was so much fun to play, and it's great because with the kids that are in the show, because the show kids like you, you guys are extraordinary, weird people that you're like little men and women in little child bodies who are right. So smart and so funny and so. You get it. You understand everything, and you never have to, especially Broadway kids, you never have to go like coddle them or do anything. No, you guys are professionals.
Right.
You guys are amazing. And we, when I was on, you know, I was working with my first cast of young actors in the show, and they're just gangbusters. And that was the best part, making friends with these young actors who were so fun and so, and of course, Trunchbull just doesn't come on the stage and saunter and say something. No, she's like cannonball. She just comes out and just is playing a monster. But of course, the kids knew me personally.
Sure.
So they knew it wasn't, you know, I was in there, but you know, the audience that, you know, so the kids were just like facing upstage and all you see is them just going, you're awful. You're terrible.
Yeah.
They're making faces at me. They're making faces at me. I'm making them laugh doing something else by looking at them a strange way.
It
was so much fun. And then I had to go. I started not having a good time because I stayed too long.
I know 2 years in that role is insane.
Yeah, it was insane. And I started like not liking what I was doing. So I was like, I gotta go. But
yeah.
The sad thing about this, and you know, because you probably, you know, aged out of a show.
Yeah.
And that's the worst day.
Right.
So not only worse for you, but it's worst for the cast. I mean, the adult cast too, because we fall in love with you guys. You guys are amazing. You're part of our family. And I went through about 4 rounds of Matilda's.
Oh, God.
Yeah. And you have to put in for each one.
Oh, and no.
Plus they bring in a new cast. They usually hire, they let go 6 to 7 young cast members and then bring in 6 to 7 new ones.
Oh,
of course.
Dear Lord.
So they're all rehearsing. It's like the Matilda was a constant rehearsal machine. It was just constantly going.
Yeah.
And, but I got to know when it was about to happen. And especially Bruce Bogtrotter.
Right.
guy named this kid. Well, now he's a man, but Mitchell Sink. Mitchell Sink. Yes. Was, you know Mitchell?
Oh, of course. Of course. Yeah, I mean, Mitchell.
Oh, my God. One of my favorites of all time.
Yes.
Because he would, I would turn around like Bruce Bogtrotter and get right in get right in his face. But I would do it and he would always be like, he was facing upstage. But right. It was the one day when I turned around and I was like, Bruce Bogtrotter. And I saw there was a difference in him. Oh. That he was now no longer a boy. He was becoming a man and he had like a jawline.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
Or something different. I broke my heart. And so all of a sudden Trunchbull had this soft spot. And I was like, no, you can't go there.
Right.
You know, but Mitchell was amazing. Well, a lot of the kids were just almost all of them were just incredible. And
yeah. They're all good friends of mine. Everyone in like, I mean, yeah. Once you're in shows, yeah, you know everybody, right? Yeah. It's a small community. But yes, they're amazing. Mitchell and I did a Christmas Story together at Madison Square Garden. And Alexa, Nijak, and all of those guys, Annalise, all of them. They're the best. And I was actually talking to, I went to dinner last night with Madeline Morrow and Zell. They were talking about you. And that's what made me reach out to you.
Oh,
yes.
Wow.
So it's this whole Matilda family happening right now, even though I wasn't even in the show. Oh. but yes, as you said, Matilda can't imagine how intense that.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18 plus.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
It must be to play that role 8 times a week. I know for the kids, there was a very particular daily routine for them. And they had to show up to the city to the city, to the theater and everything 4 hours before the show. Did you have to do anything particular for that role that you had to keep yourself in check and shape and all that?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I had to stretch like crazy and make sure that I wouldn't that was one of those shows you could really, really hurt yourself.
Yeah.
Because there was a rake on the stage as well. So you wouldn't really be able to tell from the audience.
No.
Light rake, so there was like that.
Oh my God.
But you wouldn't think that would affect your body, but it really does over the course of, you know, weeks and months.
Right.
Because you're supposed to stand on flat ground or flat stage, not this. Plus, there's all these little trap doors and all these little set pieces that come up and out of the floor. And they wiggle.
Yeah.
They wiggle. So when you're standing on a certain spot and like doing the Smell of Rebellion, where you're in these crazy gym clothes and you're balancing on one leg and the other leg is, you know, out to the right, you know, an Olympic stance, and you're on this cube that's jiggling like this on the floor. And so, you know, my core was never stronger.
Oh my God. Can't imagine. Yeah. That is the beauty of theater. If you ever need a workout, there's no better workout.
Oh my gosh. No. And now we were talking about this the other day. My Broadway stamina.
Oh yeah.
Oh no. Oh no.
Oh yeah.
It's been a year and 4 months. I don't know if I'm going to be able to do, I will be able to, but I'm working right now. Once we found out we were coming back.
Yeah.
I was like, ooh, okay. It's Operation Deflation. I got to lose some of this.
Operation Deflation.
But also I've got to get my voice and my physical, you know, I got to sing a song, which we did in rehearsals for Matilda. They had me sing the entire Smell of Rebellion going up and down on a block so I could breathe.
No.
And all this stuff. So I need to do that. I need to do that. So,
wow. It's intense. Broadway's hard. Broadway's hard.
Broadway's hard. That's what Beth Level always says. Right. Beth Level always says that. Broadway's hard.
Yes, of course. And then Josh Lehman passed that down to me. he steals everything from Beth. I love him. But let's talk about this other crazy role that you did, Lord Farquaad, which you're like, which one? Lord Farquaad, you were on your knees the entire show. Did you, first of all, did you ever think Lord Farquaad could earn you a Tony nomination? I mean, hey, come
here's
on.
The story. Here's the story. Okay, so Jason Moore, the amazing director, and he's a dear friend of mine as well. He directed me in a couple shows, and also I've done so many workshops and readings for him. And the one I was in London doing Spamalot. I opened up in the West End and ended up Spamalot there. And he emails me, and he always gives me, he always calls me when it's something weird. like this is going to sound so stupid, but you know, do it and it'll be, it should be fun. So he emailed me while I was in London. He says, "Hey, when are you coming back?" And I said, "Like February." And he said, "Great. Hey, do you want to help me out on this? I'm doing this musical, and don't laugh." And I was like, "What?" And he says, "But it's Shrek the musical." And I said, that is a terrible idea. That is an awful idea.
Oh my God.
Says, no. It's actually really good. We've got David Lindsay Bear and Jeannie Tesori and you know, it's going to be fun. It's going to be fun. So I got back and we did it. We only had like an act one and a couple, three or four songs. That's
it. Oh God.
And I just connected with the material like right away. Cause I was like, I don't know what this is. So I just threw it. I call it throwing darts, you know, and just like, sticks to the wall. I don't know. And it just connected with me. And from that point on, I was the only one gonna do Farquaad.
Wow.
As the show progressed, because we did so many readings and so many workshops of it, we were finally in the studio putting it up on its feet for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
Learning so many things, and we didn't know how to make Farquaad short. We didn't know how.
So especially you're a tall guy.
I'm 6'2", like 220. I'm huge.
The tallest guy is playing the shortest guy.
So what we did was we came up with some ideas, just throwing ideas in. One was going to be a trench that would be, or like a little place where I would stand and put the little legs in front of me.
Uh-huh.
And the other one was a running gag where I'd always behind a set piece of some sort, like a wagon with luggage or like a vegetable cart or something really stupid. And then the last one was my fault. I came in with I was at home and I like two dowels with some shoes and socks on, just little, you know, puppet feet, basically.
Yeah.
And I did it because we were always going to have the feet anyway. So I was like, why don't I just manipulate them like Charlie Chaplin does? And I think it's the kid or something. And then I started laughing my head off in the mirror because I thought it was so funny because you couldn't really see, you could see my hands, but it didn't matter because the legs were so ridiculous.
Right.
I showed Jason Moore, the whole thing. I showed him that we all laughed out loud and we got to work on it. And Tim Hatley, our designer, our set designer, our costume designer, he and I designed what that ended up being together. Cause I was the literal guinea pig and actor. We came up with what we called the rig.
Wow.
And it was very painful. My knees were fine, but everything else, because your body's not supposed to do that. No.
I know your back. I can't imagine.
My back. It's actually my hips. My hips were terrible. My shoulders, because the momentum that you needed to go like this to move.
Right.
And it was the hips were really bad because all the weight that kind of jumped up into your hip bone. So there were times I would roll out of it. It was always on Sunday. I'd roll out of bed. I only missed six shows over like a year.
Oh my God.
Not including
good
vacation.
For you.
Not including vacation. But it was, I would roll over and it was always on a Sunday because it was the eighth show of the week. And I couldn't walk because my hip bones were so swelled up. And, and my understudies hated it when I was out because they hated doing art.
I'm sure. Oh God. And how, like, so I know not on Sundays, but like when you're doing the show and everything, like when you're finally off stage and you're able to stand up, how good does that feel?
Oh, you know, it was after a while, it was easier to be down on.
Really?
Because my body was getting so used to it. And because your body's getting, it's being morphed into a different thing because that's a physical exercise that you're doing. And your muscles are growing in a certain way because it needs to do that to make you move. And so I would be walking down the street and then I'd have to stop and like stretch my back and my hips. And I couldn't walk
Oh my God.
Really far. Well, and then I gained an extreme amount of weight because I couldn't even do a treadmill. I couldn't do a treadmill.
Right.
I couldn't do a pre-core. I couldn't do like an elliptical. I couldn't do that because I was in the hips and the joints were so sore. I couldn't do it.
Wow.
What else? There was another thing I was going to say about that. Anyway.
It's okay. What did you do? Like, did you have to like wear knee pads? Like how did they?
Yeah, that was part of the, I don't know what I wanted to get back to, about being comfortable in, you know, on the knees.
Right.
When we were doing the cast recording, I couldn't hit the notes. Things are looking up. Things are looking up. Things are looking up. You're into I couldn't hit the notes. I couldn't hit the notes standing. So I did it on my knees.
Stop it.
I sang it on my knees. They brought the boom mic down and everything, and I sang it on my knees.
Wow. In the cast recording?
Huh?
In the cast recording?
Yeah, yeah, in the booth.
Incredible. Yeah. Wow.
I couldn't hit the notes because my body wasn't
used to it. Right. Wow.
Okay, so what was the question you asked me?
How did you, like, manage? Did you have to wear knee pads? Like, what did you... They had to do something, right?
Yeah, we had all this materials that for the knee pads that were specially made for me.
Oh, okay.
I had physical therapy 3 to 4 times a week.
Yeah.
And thank goodness, because there'd be no way. And to this day, people always contact me via Facebook or Instagram or whatever. And they said, hey, we're doing Shrek. How did you do this?
Right.
And I answer them back as soon as I can, because I know how it's. They can really damage their body. So right. I always talk to them. I was like, if you feel any pain whatsoever, please stop. Because you could really hurt yourself and do permanent damage. So be careful.
Yeah, it's scary. Got to take care of your bodies. Okay, I got to ask, Trunchbull or Farquaad, if you could do it again?
Neither.
Okay, no. Great.
No, okay. No, neither. No,
hey, that's okay.
Well, no. Because I wouldn't... you know, I like to move forward and not to do things again. I once I've done something, I'm like, I got that.
Yeah.
Do something new. Let's do something.
I understand that.
The only thing that I ever repeated was Daddy Warbucks.
Oh, you would be amazing.
I wish I was amazing.
I was amazing. Oh my God. That would be perfect. Did you shave your head?
I at Paper Mill Playhouse in Millburn, New Jersey. Yeah. Oh, Beth Level was my, what do they call it? Hannigan.
Yes.
I shaved my head.
And, I'm obsessed. What a cast.
If you ever think about it, if you have time, I recommend shaving your head once.
Really?
You should experience it. It's pretty, you know, I loved it after a while. I loved it because didn't have to do this with your hair. Taking a shower, you were dry in a second.
Oh my God.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
But when you sleep too, your bald head on the pillow, it just like basically somebody hugging your
brain.
Oh,
really? Oh, I feel like I would be colder.
Oh yeah, it was.
Okay.
It was a little colder, and it was during the winter.
Oh God!
But also, you have to shave it every day when you're in a show, because your hair does grow fast, faster than you think. And
how long did it take it for all of it to get back?
To grow back completely?
Yeah, like to what it is now, basically.
Oh, months.
Oh, months. Yeah. I know. I couldn't imagine.
But when you don't shave it just for like a day, like on the day off, you're putting on a shirt or something. It's like Velcro. It's
oh
like,
God. It's not like, that.
Sticks to your shirt and you're like, ah.
Right. All those like mini hairs. Right.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Oh my God. Like well, so, okay. Shrek. I always am on like Netflix, you know, as the kids do nowadays. We go on Netflix and I'm always seeing Shrek. Do you ever like scroll through Netflix and you're like, oh my God, I'm going to watch myself on Netflix?
I haven't seen that in a while.
Really?
No, I haven't seen it. Oh gosh. Yes. I've seen it a lot.
Okay.
Yeah, I've seen it a couple times. Yeah.
Wow. Okay. So some people don't want to like watch themselves or like hear themselves, but that's awesome that you...
I couldn't wait to see it. I was because I know it was DreamWorks and they did it. They filmed it right and it looks great. And they've captured the Broadway show very, very well.
Right.
I was very excited about that. And plus the live audience aspect of it was pretty cool.
You also have to just be like so proud of like your work in that character, because literally you were the mastermind. You were like, well, you did it all.
Yeah, it was, and now it's there. And now I see other people that have, you know, basically they steal the performance, which is fine with me.
Yeah.
But also add more. So it's kind of like this, I guess I call it a macaroni project, when, you know, in elementary school, where you take macaroni and you glue it to construction paper and
right.
you pass it to the next person, and somebody adds on to it, and then somebody else adds on to it, and somebody else adds on. So it's got a life of its own. So that's terrific.
Well, yeah. I love that. And I wish, like, that's definitely, I love seeing Broadway on like a broader market, you know, like on, and because, you know, theater doesn't get enough love, I guess you could say, as it should. And like, it's all like the film and movie and all of that. So like, when you see a musical or something on Netflix, you just gotta love it. And another show that you did that kind of reached a broader market was The Prom. And that, I mean, first of all, that role for you, yes, you got it, you're wearing it.
My opening night sweatshirt that I just happened, because it's 64 degrees here right now.
Oh
my
god,
it's almost July, and I don't have a sweatshirt, so yeah, I'm wearing my opening night, you know, sweatshirt right now. Yeah,
yes, you gotta wrap.
Eli, that show, The Prom, was quite possibly my favorite professional thing that I've ever done.
Oh my god, that's incredible.
It was so much fun, because here's why. Out of the blue, Casey Nicola contacted, well, I ran up, literally ran into him on the street. And he says, oh my God, I have something for you. I was like,
no,
what? I'm doing this thing. We don't know what it is, but I'll call you in a couple of weeks and come over and we'll read it. I was like, great.
You're kidding.
So there I was, and I show up, and there's Beth Level, and there's Brooks Eschmanskius, and there's Angie Schwor, and I believe Katie Huffman was there at one point as well.
Oh my god!
I think Rachel Dratch was there as well. We read this thing, and Matt Sklar played the piano and played the songs and sang the songs, and we had a table read, almost a cold table read.
Wow.
And as it went on, we realized, because Bob Martin, Casey Nicola, Matt Sklar, Chad Begland have been our friends for 20 years or more. All of us, they wrote this with us in mind.
Wow.
And then they allowed us, as we progressed and kept on doing workshop and reading and, you know, all this lab stuff, they let us even more collaborate with them. And so there's even more of us. We always call the characters our evil twin.
Like right.
Trent Oliver is there's a little bit of me in there.
Oh my God. There's so much.
There's
you can tell it was like written for you.
Yeah. I mean, because they let us.
Right.
We just start improvising and things popped out, and just, so a lot of that is just us.
That's awesome.
But it's also that it never happens that you get a show that's written with you in mind. Then they allow you to collaborate. Plus you're working with some of your great friends.
Mm-hmm.
And it was always a fun room. It was never frustrating. It was never angry. We tried everything, and if it didn't work, fine, fuck it. Let's move on, you know?
Right.
So there are so many fun things in this show that are ours alone that, you know, I may or may not have a bootleg of it.
Oh.
I may or may not.
Right.
But it was our closing night performance, and there are so many. We're such fans of each other as well. We would watch each other's numbers when we could,
like in the wings.
Yeah, and I had the great pleasure of actually watching Beth sing "The Ladies Improving" almost every performance, because I was on next and I was stage right waiting for her to. But it was so great to see that, and she was just she was amazing in that.
Oh my god!
And watching Brooks do. Barry's going to the prom, and Angie, they're just incredible. And the way they wrote the show, all four of us had these gangbuster 11 o'clock numbers one after another.
Yes.
It was crazy. And then we were just blessed that the company that Casey put together, he set the tone, and so did we. So it was the closest cast I think I've ever been into. Ensemble, the ushers,
oh,
the house manager Kenny, the crew, everybody, the box office, everybody knew everybody, because everybody made a point of introducing themselves and respecting everyone, and it was the most magical theater experience I've ever had.
Oh.
It was so great, and it was so sad when it closed.
Yes,
so
Well, that's, I mean, that's so beautiful to hear. And also just like in a show that just preaches like the story that it has and just you guys kind of living it and like putting your putting yourself where your mouths are, I guess, like in a way, like you're just like you're preaching that, practicing what you preach, you know. And I love that. And it's so good to hear that that's how it was. How cool was it to play like an actor on a stage? Like that's like so rare. I don't know if that's a weird question, but yeah.
Well, we did, because in developing the characters too, I mean, all of us have our thing and all of us have our resolve mm-hmm. in the show. So we start off as something and end up as something.
Right.
Beth had her something where she's, you know, a diva, and then she realizes the world's not about her and she softens and she understands where she went wrong. Brooks's character, Barry, is the same thing. He's like, he just wants to be liked and he wants money.
Right.
And he goes out to help this girl and he found out he has so much in common with her that it changes him, it changes her, it changes everybody.
Right.
Angie's the same way. She had her thing. She literally quit Chicago because she was like, I can't do this anymore. And then she gets called to do Chicago. She has this journey herself. Trent, on the other hand, kind of stopped at a certain point and didn't have anything.
Right.
So during workshops and everything, I was asking Bob Martin, I was asking, so Trent needs something. He needs a thing.
Right.
To get him to the end, and he doesn't have it right now. He says, I know, I'm working on it. And I said, well, what about, like, I thought about that he's always wearing old show jackets. You might be too young for show jackets, but show jackets in the 80s and 90s were really big.
Really?
Right in their back. It was like a baseball
like jacket. A varsity jacket, kind of.
Like a varsity jacket, yeah. Exactly. But with the show logo embroidered on the back and your name on the front. And
exactly.
It was very big, and, you know, and people would wear these all over the place, and then it just became obnoxious, so people stopped doing it. But I came up with the idea of, like, Barry is probably wearing, or I mean, Trent is probably wearing something from before Les Mis, the original Les Miserables. You know, he's probably watching, probably a satin jacket, which was really big in the 80s, that says, like, The Magic Show or something, and Doug Henning, you know, like some obscure, but he's still holding on to the past. And then we came up with the idea of, instead of the show, Juilliard. Because he could always talk about Juilliard and always obnoxiously talk about Juilliard.
Oh my God, it was brilliant.
But then we decided that he is also a former member of Actors Equity.
It's so good. It's so good.
So many details that there were so many details that they just let us roll with and then they embraced them.
Right. Like it's something that's so silly, but so perfect.
Yeah.
You know? And I love that. Oh my God. And
and the Juilliard jacket.
Yes.
I asked Anne Roth, two-time Oscar winner, by the way.
Oh, my God.
Anne Roth. I said, so do you have like a 1980s Juilliard jacket? You know, because he comes when Trent in Act Two comes on and it's full regalia with the hat and the jacket and basically almost the t-shirt as well. And I said, do you have it? She said, I will make one. It'll be fine. And so I asked Casey if it would be funny and cool if I did that. And he said, I don't know, maybe try it. So I did it. And when I turned around, and I said Juilliard. And it was just like the audience went bonkers. And I was proud of that one. That was mine.
How cool is it to be a part of like shows from the very beginning and just watch it change? Like you've talked to from Shrek, you talked Prom, and all these things. And all of these amazing memories are like flowing. I love it right now.
The Spamalot, to be in the beginning of it, especially a show you kind of know is going to be a hit, you know, Spamalot. Yeah. when we were out of town in Chicago, in the very first preview we had, the house lights went down, and I was the first show of every show that I do. I always like to go to the stage manager's desk, you know, either stage right or stage left, and just like listen for the crowd. And he says, "House to half." The house went to half, and it's at the Schubert Theater in downtown Chicago. That place went apeshit.
Yeah.
And I just looked at Peter Lawrence, our PSM, and I said, I think we're going to be okay.
Like, yes. Okay. Oh, and my God.
Tim Curry and the Coconuts come on. The audience just went crazy. And that was it was never not like that always.
Yeah.
But to be able to watch the development and be a part of it and just them again. That was a Casey show, so he allowed me to do some of the certain things. But also, we had Mike Nichols.
Right,
Mike Nichols was one of the greatest direct is one of the greatest directors of all time, and he you're in his atmosphere now. You are part of his universe, and he is the sun. And
yeah.
You are a reflection in the star. I mean, he was so amazing. One of those people that he could tell you what and how to do something in like a sentence, and you would understand it. You would just get it. But also, we couldn't wait for him to come see the show. Like,
yeah.
Sometimes when directors come back to see a show, where they're like, "Oh, what did we change? What did we do anything weird?"
Right.
He was like a dad. So it was like, we were proud to show him what we've been doing. And he was always like, "Oh, wonderful. All of you. And he had this thing called, your babies. Now your babies are like a turn and squeak, something that doesn't really have anything to do with the material, but it gets a laugh from the audience.
Mm-hmm.
And that's called a baby, or some move or something, a baby, or even how you say something to get a laugh.
Right.
Doesn't necessarily support the material, but it's funny and the audience likes it. So,
yeah.
And he says, "I love your babies. They're fine. I love your babies.
Oh.
But every now and then I want you to kill your babies."
Oh,
So he would come into our dressing room and say, "My boy, I love what you're doing. I love it. However, I want you to kill your babies."
Oh,
and
my
so
God.
So which means you have to not do those bits
right
anymore, and you have to find something else. And it's great. And I recommend this highly, because letting go of a bit, you're going to feel a little like, "Oh, no, don't take my bit away." Let it go. And
right.
You will find something new. It forces you to do that. And I did, and I had to cut about 9 babies.
Oh my God.
And I just kind of did them. And I was having the best time of my life, because I wasn't like a slave to these things that I created.
Right. And it kept it fresh too, you know?
And it's also, yeah, it just freshens you up as well.
Right.
The one thing about that company too, I mean, first of all, what a company.
Oh my God.
A bunch of comedians just playing around, and that's what it was. It wasn't even work.
Yeah.
We had a blast. We used to get there a little, like an hour early, because we loved each other, and we just wanted to be around each other, because during the show goes like a bullet. And if you're not on stage, you're backstage changing costume.
Right.
So you never really get a chance to hang out. So we would do that. You know, we all played 5 characters or less.
Unbelievable. No less than
5. And that show lends itself to just making your cast. Mike Nichols called it surprising your fellow actor, and so we would find
yes.
little bits. And he says all it takes too is a little inflection differently, and you'll just go crazy. But Hank Azaria was the best, because we always called him the wounded antelope on the prairie, and Christian Borle and I would just all we had to do is nothing and just say our line, and he would just. Go. He would just go.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered ChumbaCasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details. Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered ChumbaCasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Oh my God. That seems like that's the best kind of theater. Like, honestly, just from an actor's perspective and from an audience perspective.
Right.
That's
as
amazing.
As long as the audience is in on the joke. Yeah, it's
right.
Funny.
Yeah. And that show also brought you a Tony nomination.
Yeah.
So like, talk about that. Like, what is that? You get word that you're nominated for a Tony. What is that like?
Well, The first one was for Spamalot, and we were out here on the island, and it was May, I guess. And I was sleeping in because I didn't even think it would happen. I mean, I didn't even anticipate it happening. And I was in bed, and my phone kept ringing.
Yeah.
And I was like, just leave me alone. I'm sleeping in. I'm doing a Broadway show. All right. Right. I don't get up until noon. Everyone knows this. So my phone wouldn't, and then I see it's Richard Fisher, my agent at Abrams. And I was like, what do you want? And he says, I've been trying to reach you. I was like,
stop
what?
It.
What? And he says, you have a Tony nomination. I was like,
oh,
what?
What? That's all he says.
You're coming, knock it off. And he says, no, you seriously, you have a Tony nomination. The press people are going to be calling you in like 45 minutes or less. They're going to talk to you about things. They want to see your reaction. They want to do that. And then tomorrow you have this whole press junket and all this stuff. And it was just like overwhelming, this tidal wave of whoa coming at you. Everything you've always wanted, everything you worked for, it finally comes true in one moment. And then I guess it was the feeling. I mean, there were tears. There were tears. But also, I think it was more of a feeling of, I guess Sally Field said it right. They like me. They really like me, you know? And it was the respect that you felt from that when you're noticed for work you've done. And it's the respect that is a palpable feeling.
Yeah.
That is pretty cool. I think that was the coolest part. And I knew that I wasn't probably going to win because there were so many other people that were much better than me.
I mean, you never know. You didn't even expect to get nominated, you know? Like,
You never knew. But and Mike McGraw, who was in our, you know, he was Patsy in the show. We were nominated in the same category. So
yes.
We thought, well, I'll see you at the bar. How about that?
Oh, that's I love that sportsmanship.
but Sada Ramirez won that night for Lady of the Lake, and she was sitting right in front of us. And when they called her name, we were like, yay, right behind her. I think you can see us. And if you look on YouTube, you can see us going, yay.
Oh, my God. That's incredible. Fun. I love that. Even like that just shows like how amazing this community is of like Broadway folks. Just like you guys are.
I always call it Broadway's like the big high school, but everyone's at the cool kids table.
Yes.
Gosh, we've all worked our butts to get there. Right. So the respect that you actually give each other. We know, you know, there's very few people on Broadway in this community that are not kind. Yes. Everyone is kind. Everyone is generous. I mean, there are a few that are just like, stay away from them. But for the most part, we worked our butts off to get here. So there's a mutual respect that we have that's doesn't happen anywhere else. Let me tell you.
No.
And we can get along with each other so well.
Yes, literally. And I can't believe that like I can be considered in the cool kids table. You know, like, I love that. I love that analysis, I guess, that beautiful picture that you painted for us. Let's talk about Company. Like, this is the show that you're going to be in. So wait, did you start rehearsal before the pandemic?
Yes.
You did?
Yes.
Oh my God. So were you guys, so what was that when you like heard that like Broadway shutting down?
Okay. Well, let's back up here because I was in prom.
Right.
Marianne Elliott, who's the director and producer of the show, who, by the way, the best director, best producer, just amazing, gets stuff out of you that you never knew you had. Oh. So it was in June of, we were still doing the prom, and they had an audition for Company. I was like, oh, great, fine. So I went in. And it was there was this woman in the hallway at Chelsea Studios, and she says, I said, oh, hello. And she said, oh, hello, in an English accent. And I was like, oh, you're from England. And she said, yes. I was like, oh, well, welcome to America. And she said, I said, well, thank you. And I was like, what do you think so far? She said, well, I love the air conditioning. I love it. Like, great, fantastic. And we chatted for a little bit, and then she went off on her little merry way, and I was sitting there and just going over material and stuff like that, and the casting director calls me and says, hey, come on in the room, and who's behind the table but that woman I was talking about, air conditioning, and it's Marianne Elliott.
Oh my God.
Can you imagine if I was just like, oh, fuck off, you know?
Right.
just like, oh. Audition's already over.
Right. Oh my God, I'd be terrified.
But that room that she had, the audition room, you know how it is. The audition room can either be terrifying or it can be like really comfortable. And that room was like, I was hanging out in our living room and we were just talking about Company and Sondheim. It was great. And then I got a call back.
I think it was the air conditioning conversation. I think that's what did it. I think before you even went in, they were like, we're giving this guy a callback.
And just because the air conditioning, darling. They called me back and I went in, and then that's when I saw, waiting to go in was with Maddie Doyle, Greg Hildreth. I believe Jen Simard was just coming around. Gosh, it was almost the entire cast except was it like lined up in the hallway, and of course I knew them all, I knew everybody.
Yeah,
and so we were just kind of giggling and everything. I went in, I did my thing, I came out, and I was like, well, it's in God's hands, whatever. So I'm moving on. So I get cast. I'm one of the first to get cast, and so I got to tell my cast members. The top of two backstage on stage. I said, guys, I got Company. And we're like, oh my God. And they couldn't yell. They couldn't scream because they were on stage.
Oh, at prom.
They were at prom. We were on stage when I told them.
Stop
and,
it.
And they're like,
oh my God.
So then, prom closes. And then I have a couple weeks off. And then I start rehearsals. We started in early, January 6, I believe, last year, the year before. Yes, it's all whatever that January 6 was.
Sure.
So we got into, and then we, so when we rehearsed for 8 weeks, which is a lot.
Yeah.
But I'm glad we had it because it's the way that it's staged and the way it's directed, it's a lot. It's a lot of cool stuff that is almost like a one gigantic magic trick. So it's a lot. It's a really cool stuff. It's so cool. It's such an amazing show. It's such an amazing production.
Yes. I have to say, Company and Mrs. Doubtfire are the two shows I'm looking forward to seeing post-pandemic the most.
I can't wait to see Rob do
yes.
that.
Yes. Oh, my God.
He's one of my great friends, and I just know he's going to kill it. So
yes.
I can't wait either. So we had eight previews in. We were eight previews in.
Oh, my God.
We were up and running.
Oh,
and the audiences were, the line around the block to get tickets to the show.
Yeah.
I've never seen that. I mean, Spamalot was close, but this was like down the block for cancellations. Everybody wanted a ticket. We're sold to the rafters. Not a standing room in sight.
That's amazing.
It was amazing. And and then that first week or like we were in tech and we heard the news about the stuff coming.
Right.
And, you know, we're like, something's coming. I don't know what we knew it was COVID, but we didn't know how it's going to affect everything yet.
Exactly.
But Chris Harper, our other producer, is always open and forthright with us. And he always told us the truth. And as things started getting closer to our opening, it was like the last 7 days we had a meeting every day about the situation, and the Schuberts were telling us about, we couldn't allow anybody backstage. Nobody from other shows were allowed backstage. Food deliveries had to be outside. It was all these protocols, and they're cleaning theaters, which I think is hilarious because the Schuberts actually finally clean their own theaters.
Right. You know? Right. As they should.
For them to clean their own theaters. And so that happened. And then that day, the 11th, March 11th, was the last day.
Wow.
And it was a Wednesday. And we were, we had a meeting in the morning. And he says, just so you know, someone at the Martin Beck, but the Al Hirschfeld Theater and the Booth Theater has COVID.
Right.
So Moulin Rouge is not doing their show.
Mm-hmm.
And then somebody at the Booth, I think the Booth was, they had something going on, but I was going to close anyway, but I can't remember what it was there, but that it was an usher, but that usher had worked at the Hirschfeld and then a couple other theaters, but not ours. So he decided to go on with rehearsal. And then that night before the show, He said there are more people now. It's spreading. We're going to have a meeting tomorrow. Like not a Zoom. Zoom didn't really exist yet.
Exactly.
We're going to have a phone conference call with everybody. So call into this number tomorrow. And then he explained everything. I was asking my PSM, I said, should I come in? Because I'm out in rural New Jersey. So if I have to be in New York City at a certain time, I have to leave at a certain hour. And it was approaching that minute that I have to leave. And I just texted him, said, should I come in or should I go? He says, don't come in. And that was the next day. And then they said, no, Broadway's closed. And we thought, you know, a month or two.
Yeah. I know it takes a lot for Broadway to close, you know, like,
So we thought a month or two and now, you know, here we are. But 2.5 months later, I went back. The Schuberts allowed us to go back, get our stuff in our dressing room.
Right.
Our stuff is still there.
Unbelievable.
My personal items are still there. And I went into the theater backstage, mask and gloves and shields. And
oh, yeah.
The call board is still March 11th. March
11th.
Wow. Full company in the sign-in sheet and the rehearsal schedule, March 11th, still there. Went out on stage and the stage is set for Harry and Sarah, first scene after the opening number. Jen Smart and our set is there. It's sitting right there. And the ghost lights on, the house was at half, so you could see the theater and the merchandise is still exactly where it is. And the playbills are still stacked in, you know, behind the last row in the orchestra. Wow. Went up to my dressing room. The room is exactly how I left it. It was crazy. There's still water.
I'm getting goosebumps.
I know, it was crazy. Yeah. And I didn't need anything from the room because we weren't there long enough to have, you know, stuff in your dressing room.
Right.
And so I just wanted to see. I just wanted to see the theater. I wanted to see people, you know. And right. So, but I left and it was very eerie. It was very eerie and very, very depressing.
Right.
But the good news is we are coming back.
Yes. So did you like kind of as it was going, I know you had like daily meetings, but I'm sure that changed, you know, as updated often?
Yeah. We started rehearsing over Zoom with the entire company. And it was
no way.
The first or second, because we thought, oh, let's just keep the music and keep the dialogue in our brains and, you know, keep us, you know, remembering everything. And this is funny that we discovered, and I think a lot of people discovered, is you can't sing Sondheim over Zoom.
Yep. Sounds about right. Not the delay.
No, because the delay is like, Bobby. Baby. Baby, baby. And it was like, we started giggling and laughing so hard because it was just ridiculous. You know,
oh my
and
God.
It's like Bobby, baby, Bobby, booby, Bobby, 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 honey, Bobby, sweetie, Bobby. And it just like so bad. It's just it sounded like somebody stuttering.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So we just did the dialogue and then we just read through the dialogue. And even there was delay there, too. So we started just having cocktail parties and Zoom meetups and just say hi. And we played bingo one time. We played trivia games. And then it, you know, it slowly, it used to be like once a week, twice a week, once a week, twice a month, once every month, once every 2 months.
Right.
So,
slowly fades. Yeah,
it's always so nice to see everybody. So.
Yeah. And then was it just a couple weeks ago that you found out that you were coming back?
Well, we knew because our producers actually were one of the only ones with pandemic insurance.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
So they actually made money.
That's incredible. I didn't know that was a thing.
Yeah. Yeah, it is because they had two shows, one in London. It was the Curious Incident of the Dog in the Nighttime.
Oh,
I believe
yes.
It was at the Apollo Theater or the Gielgud Theater in the West End, where the ceiling of the theater literally collapsed on top of the audience during a performance.
Oh,
so, and another production of theirs, I think it was Death of a Salesman, the theater burned to the ground. So, from that point on, they were like, maybe it's us. So now they have the gold platinum standard insurance, whatever they do, because they don't want to, you know, the ceiling. And they said, give us everything, whatever you think, tidal wave, you know, aliens, pandemic. And they did. Well, and so we were fine. We knew we were going to be fine. We knew we were going to be okay. Chris Harper even said, we're going to be okay because we have pandemic insurance. We're fine.
Right.
When was the question? And then they let us know that we're coming back, and I think we might be coming back sooner than later. We're not sure yet, but that would be good.
Yes. Everybody's dying to see it for so many reasons.
To get the back of the room with these fabulous people.
Yes. The show is never it's gender bent. So some of the characters, and that's amazing. Everyone's so excited for that. And I can't believe it took this long, but it's happening.
So much better. Actually, Steve Sondheim said that he wasn't keen on the idea.
Oh, really?
He wasn't keen on the idea because people always fuck with his material, and he's always like, don't do that. Jeez.
Right.
And Marianne said, just let me try it. Marianne Elliott. She said, just let me try it. And he saw it and he loved it. And he said, I can't see the show any other way now. This is the way it should be. This is the show.
Wow.
Isn't that crazy?
That's incredible. For her though too to stand her ground and be like, no, let's try it.
Yeah, let's try it. Let's
yeah.
Try it.
Wow. Oh my God. I love that story. That's impressive. And I love this Marianne. She seems incredible. I mean, air conditioning. Try it out. Oh my God.
Oh,
this is amazing.
The things she can get out of you, Marianne. The things she can get out of you too. And she. There's never drama with her. She's just like, yeah, whatever. Let's see. Let's go. Isn't that lovely? Try that. I like that. No. Yeah, let's do that.
I have to say, British people are like the nicest people.
It's not necessarily theater games, but she just like little clues is like, there's a little something there. Why don't you find something there? You know, why don't you a little trophy or something? Grab that trophy there. Just find out. Let's find out that trophy. The stuff she gets out of you is it's extraordinary. So
yes.
I'm happy. And of course, my lovely, lovely Jen Simard, who's playing my wife, Sarah.
What a duo.
We've known each other for 30 years. And when I auditioned for the show and I got it, my husband, Kevin, and I, we were talking about who would be the best Sarah. And I said, well, Jen Simard.
Oh my God.
The best Sarah.
And you didn't know she got it at the time?
No, we didn't. I didn't know she got it. She didn't know I got it.
Stop
because
it
wasn't released.
Right.
It was released on one day on Broadway World and Broadway.com and, you know, all the other playbill. And so it came out and it was released. And I saw, it's like, oh my God, it's Jen Simard.
It's happening.
We texted each other and our texts crashed into each other because we're like both going, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God.
Yes.
And so that was, that was pretty heavy.
God.
And of course, you know, she and I, we have our own way of working with comedy, and she already knows where the laugh is, but she makes the, how to get to the journey to get to that laugh.
Yeah.
What are the steps I got to get there? And I'm just, like I said before, I'm a dart thrower. So I'm just like, see what happens. Maybe that'll stick. Nah. If it doesn't stick, I'm moving on. Mm-hmm. Finding a new thing. Yeah. But she and I work so well together and our chemistry is amazing.
Oh my God.
An unbelievable comedian. And knowing her, if you met Jen on the street, you're like, she doesn't seem funny.
No. Literally.
Because she's just very serious because she's so I guess chemical about comedy. It's gotta be the right ingredients. And she's analyzing how to get there. But when she's there, she's a different person. It's awesome. It's amazing.
Oh my God. Well, everyone go see Company when everything's back on. I don't know. The date right now, I believe, is like December 20th, right?
I don't know.
Yeah. Okay.
There's a couple. I would like to say, but I can't say because I'm not sure. They're not sure. It may be earlier. It may be then. I'm not sure. I'm hoping it's earlier, but we'll see.
Well, everyone go get your tickets because it's amazing. Yeah. Go see Chris. Go see Jen Simard be this incredible duo that they so perfectly are. And it's literally, you're going to laugh your butts off. So I'm so excited. I can't wait to go see it. And Chris, thank you for doing this. Your storytelling, your energy, everything.
I've got way too many stories. Way too many stories.
I could literally talk to you all day. Literally, this is way too entertaining. I didn't even ask you about Chicago and Pippin and all these other shows. There's too many shows that you've been in, Chris.
Yeah.
What are you doing to us?
14.
What's that? 14?
14 yeah. Broadway shows.
I know. It's insane. And we didn't even talk about Magoo. Oh, my God. Anyways. And first of all, I do have to say quickly, my favorite photo of all time, I didn't even realize it at the time, But I look back on it all the time, and my dad and I love this photo more than anything, and it's me and you after our performance of Mr. Magoo, and you're in this suit, and it's got all kinds of different colored Christmas trees on it.
Oh, it was a Christmas suit, yeah.
Yes! Oh my god, it's the most lovely suit that I've ever seen, but have never seen it. Like, literally, you are the only person I've seen wear it, and I think it's because you're the only one that can wear it successfully. Literally.
There's nothing like upstaging everyone at that press. You
know, that's oh my god. I know, we have like Betsy Wolf and all these incredible
Who? Bills, who?
Yeah, and you're there in this incredible suit, and that was like the highlight of that night. Oh my god, it was amazing. I'm obsessed. But yes, seriously, thank you so much. It was wonderful.
I want to see that picture. Send that picture to me, Eli.
I will, absolutely. Yes, oh my god, send it to me. You may not. You probably recognize me more then than now, yeah. But I don't even recognize myself in that picture. But yes, I will absolutely send that to you. Oh, this was a blast. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
I can't wait to see Company. Good luck when it opens.
Thanks, boo.
Take a bow, Christopher Sieber. Oh my god, y'all. I literally could have talked to this man for hours. He has too many credits on his freaking resume for me to get through all of the shows. There's just too much to talk about, okay? I'm so sorry for those Spamalot fans and those Chicago fans and those Pippin fans and those Beauty and the Beast fans and the Triumph of Love. I didn't even talk about his Broadway debut. I feel so awful. There's so many things that we could have talked about, and there were so many shows that he's been in, and I could not get to all of them. I'm so sorry. But literally, the stories that he told and the shows that we talked about were just incredible. I mean, I was on the edge of my seat the entire time. Him talking about the revival of Company and how it's happening and just what it's going to be, and him with his director and his audition experience. I mean, it was just everything that you wanted in an episode of a podcast. He kept it so real. He kept it so just... It reminded you that he was a human, yet he's been in 14 Broadway shows, and he's this Broadway legend. You know, he's totally like in the Carolee Carmellos and the all of those people conversation, and the Beth Levels, and all of like the Brooks Ashmankus, and all of the theater icons. He's totally up there, and he's not there. He's not as talked about as these other people solely because he's not the classical star. And instead, he takes on a more challenging role, such as Lord Farquaad and such as Trunchbull and all of these things, where it's just like, it's incredible. I mean, the roles that he's played are truly, it's only certain people can play it, you know? And that's interesting because he also said that Casey Nicola, you know, the director and choreographer of The Prom, and he was talking about Spamalot as well, he had approached him and was like, we wrote this with you in mind. You know, like, there are just certain things that certain people can play, and not everyone can play it just because of how challenging and demanding it is. And Christopher Sieber is one of those guys that just can do everything, you know, because that's just how talented he is. So I was so excited to talk to him. The stories he told about Stephen Sondheim and talking about Company and talking about Lord Farquaad and the making of Lord Farquaad. The poor guy had this brilliant idea that may have backfired on him when he realized that he had to do it 8 times a week. Poor guy. I mean, now he has hip problems and everything. Thankfully, he seems better. And of course, The Prom and just every story and how close it was and how they really just they practiced what they preached, and they loved Thy Neighbor, which is his brilliant song. Yes, he did play Trent Oliver, who, if you didn't see the musical but you saw the movie, it's the drama teacher that Andrew Reynolds play. Although I'm not going to say it's Andrew Reynolds' role, because Christopher Sieber did it first, and Christopher Sieber was really the blueprint for Andrew Reynolds. So, yes, Christopher Sieber killed it, everything he did. Matilda, we talked about literally everything, and I was just so, so excited to talk to him and talk to him about all of those incredible moments in his career. His story is really interesting, how he paid for himself to go to college, how he paid for himself to go on buses to Minnesota to do theater and everything. Just this guy knew that this is what he wanted to do, and he went all in, and he made it work, and I think it worked out. What do you guys think? I mean, 14 Broadway shows later and still going, he's going to be in Company. I cannot wait to talk about Company. The way that he explained it to me after we after we stopped recording, was just incredible. The way that the director had imagined this revival is just something so extraordinary. And I just can't wait to see how they pull it off, because I'm listening to this and I'm like, well, how is that going to work? And how is that going to translate to the audience? And how would I know that if you didn't tell me? And he was like, oh, you'll see. Don't worry. So I'm just so excited to listen and watch. And literally, I think after talking to him, Company may be the show that I'm going to look forward to seeing most when Broadway returns. I know. I'm very excited for it. And it's going to be just the fact that it's gender bent and how historic it is and how the cast. I mean, come on. We talked about the cast. It's just, it's incredible. And so I'm looking forward to that. And I mean, this guy, I hope we see him on stage many, many more times, because every time he's on the stage, you know you're getting a good show. You know you're going to laugh and you're going to feel all your emotions. And if you are crying, it's a lighthearted cry and it's not a dreadful cry, because he just livens everything up, and just his personality, his energy, his storytelling, everything. It was just so perfect. And I could not thank Christopher Sieber for coming on this podcast and giving us his time and giving us his story. Hopefully, we're going to have him back on, because I just have to say, like, those stories, he has stories for days and we didn't even get to talk through everything. So I'm really, really excited for you all to listen to this one, and I hope you all enjoy it. So that's going to be it for today. And Broadway's coming back. Y'all, literally not even a month, we're going to have our first show back on Broadway. Bruce Springsteen. Did we also, like, that's another thing. Did we all really think that Bruce Springsteen would be the one Broadway show opening the post-pandemic? Like, not like opening, but like starting off Broadway's reopening in during a pandemic. Oh my gosh, that's, I love it. It's just so 2021. And yeah, I'm excited, and it's going to be good, and there's going to be so many new things to watch, and I think that just makes Broadway's return so much more exciting, because there's all these shows that we've already seen, like, oh, like, yay, it's back, and I get to go see live theaters, but I get to go see stories that have already been heard and cast members that I've already seen. But I want to see new work, and I want to see new art and new casts together and telling a story that I'm not as familiar with. So I can't wait to see all of these shows, and I hope everyone feels the same, because Broadway's return is literally going to be electric, and I cannot wait. And yeah, so that's going to be it for episode 27. It was such a wonderful episode. I hope you all enjoyed it as much as I do. I clearly enjoyed it. And yeah, I'll see you all next week. Be kind, be safe, and don't get COVID before you go see your next musical, because that would be really bad. All right. Thank you, everyone, and have a great week. Bye. For this episode's Curtain Call, I would like to recognize a few people who also deserve to take a bow. This podcast would not be possible without the help from Dory Berenstein, Brittany Bigelow, Katie Rosen, Alan Seals, and the team at the Broadway Podcast Network. Next in line to take a bow is Tessie Tokash, who edits the audio and all the visuals for this podcast. A special thanks to patrons Brian Thompson, Pat McNamara, the listeners at PCC, as well as all of the other patrons for their continued support. If you're interested in becoming a patron, go to patreon.com/TAB. And if you enjoyed this week's episode, don't forget to subscribe on the platform that you're currently listening to this on. Also, feel free to give us a follow on Instagram at Take A Bow Podcast. Take A Bow's logo is designed by Giselle Bustos, and the music is by Nikki Torsha and Cormac Collinon. Bye, everyone. Hope to see you next week.
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the Rise Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RiseTheatre.org, because only together we rise.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.